3-784-4397. A message from the Government of Canada.
Hey, you. Come over here and listen.
Oh, God, I'm so fucking wet. Yeah. Yeah. Like that. Like that. I would love your cock to be inside me. Oh, fuck. Oh, God. I'm really gonna come. I'm really gonna come. Oh, God, I'm so fucking wet. Can you see how wet I am? Can you see how wet I am? Oh, fuck. Yeah. 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 Oh, fuck.
It's time for Audio Smut. It's time for Audio Smut. Smut, smut, smut.
Smut, smut, smut.
A queer, feminist, trans positive radio show about fucking in all its forms.
Four, five fingers.
Let's not beat around the bush. This show contains explicit sexual content. So turn the volume all the way up.
Oh, that was so hot. I'm gonna pee for you now. Are you ready? Yeah, you wanna watch me pee? Oh yeah, I'm gonna pee, yeah.
Audio Smut, where we whisper all the dirty little fantasies and secrets in your ears.
Baby, come closer.
I like to finger
I like fuck. It when it hurts a little. Sometimes I like it when it hurts a lot. I
thought about fucking them for ages.
I just want to hear you say, and then I find fuck me, it. Over and over again.
The sound of you moaning drives me fucking crazy.
Fuck the gender, please.
Spank me.
Spank me.
Push me up against the wall and stick your dildo inside of me.
Let's just talk dirty to science fiction, fan fiction,
cyber sex,
role playing.
The taste of a sweaty girl in my mouth.
I love your scars and the way they look.
Put on your clothes.
When we're fucking.
Can I put on your lipstick?
All I can think about is your asshole. Kiss
Let's
my
play
neck
dress up
and blow softly.
Nipple torture.
I love. Waking
spread
up.
Spread your cheeks wide
you
for me
in bed.
And let me in.
You giggle.
Make me come.
Make me scream. Make me listen.
Good evening, everybody. It's minuit, and you're listening to Audio Smut on CKUT 90.3 FM. It's almost 6 o'clock. We're recording not in studio, at home, because, you know, it's these kind of time. But today we have a very special guest, one of my dear friend, Burbiculo. Burbiculo is a professional dancer and performance artist. It's interested in the transformation of suffering and creation, and its performances have to do with gender and sensuality. After gaining artistic experience and recognition in Mexico City's queer scene, Burbiculo creates and presents performances and shows in different cities of Mexico and in Montreal when it comes by, like now. Apart from its creative work, it organizes events, teaches workshops, and studies somatic sex education to deepen its understanding of sensuality, a powerful vessel for communication and vulnerability. In a world based on fear and shame of the erotic. Por Piccolo, how are you?
Wow, it's nice to hear my own bio. I'm good. I'm a little nervous.
I'm so glad you accepted the interview.
Yeah.
And today is the full moon in Gemini. Yeah. Also, the full moon looking at us talking. It's a very good time for this. So I was wondering, did you wanted to start talking a little bit about who you are as an artist, your parcours, because for people at home who don't know yet Por Piccolo, Por Piccolo is an artist that was born and raised in Canada.
Yeah.
But that you're doing most of your art now in Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah, my career is mostly in Mexico. I mean, pretty much, well, yeah, only, but then soon to change. Yeah, I never know, like, where to start, because it kind of depends if we're talking about dance or about gender or about, like, neurodiversity. I don't know. But when it comes to dance, I was professionally trained in classical ballet. And then when I was, like, 18, I was like, this is shit. Like, this isn't so not me. This is so rigid and I'm not, and just... And I don't want to do a career in dance, basically. And then I studied literature, and I was really unhappy, honestly. But I think it's, like, yeah, definitely the years I danced the least were the unhappiest years of my life. And then I started, like, dancing hip-hop, which was, like, so out of my comfort zone. And I will always remember my first class where I was like, oh, my God, like, my body's, like, formatted to move in a way, and now it's, like, I have to get rid of all that to, like, move in a totally different way. But I was, like, really excited about it, and then when I finally, like, dropped out of university, then I had more time to dance again, and then I really got into street dances in Montreal, and just, like, learned the most I could, and then ballroom got to Montreal, yeah.
Yeah, do you want to talk us more about the ballroom?
So, the ballroom culture has different beginnings. It kind of started with beauty pageants and, like, drag contests in, like, New York from the, like, 1920s. But we can really see the beginning of ballroom, like, as ballroom in the 60s, 70s in Harlem, New York, where trans women of color, basically, like, trans women started ballroom because they didn't have a space. So it's also, like, a moment where the trans and the drag community were not that separated, because, like, amongst other things, access to hormones wasn't the same and that kind of stuff. So basically Crystal LaBeija, which is the person who started ballroom, the first house, House of LaBeija, is a trans woman, And she's black, and she was like, fuck the drag balls where there's always the white drag queens who win. So she started her own shit. And within ballroom, like, groups are organized in houses, because especially at that time and place, and I mean still, the people didn't really have families because of their gender identities or sexual orientation. Mm. So they provided that for each other, and it was, like, it's still structured usually with, like, house mother and father and children. And then, like, well, for those houses that began in, like, the 60s, now there's, like, grandparents and, like...
Oh, that's so cute. That's, like, intergenerational queer stories.
Yeah, and I think that can be, like, really powerful to have elders, you know? But then it depends on the scene. Anyways, that's, like, a whole other subject, but... And then within ballroom, there's a lot of categories. Basically, it's just a space where people who never had a space to shine can have their, you know, live their fantasies. And it, there's a lot also of, you know, we couldn't question it a lot because it also can reproduce binary and, like, very white ideals, because it was kind of like living that fantasy that they couldn't live in the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
And And yeah, and then the dance, the voguing dance started as, well, Old Way, which was posing for kind of like the idea of the magazine Vogue. And then that evolved. I mean, like, the history of ballroom is like huge, you know? And then that's all New York, you know? So when you move that to Montreal or to Mexico or to like Russia, it's always so different because, well, now it's, you know, 2020 and cultural contexts are different and the needs of different communities are different too. So we always have like those good fights. Like, I'm not even gonna say like dialogues and like conflict about where can we, like, we need to respect tradition, but also we need to adapt, right? So.
And so you were saying that the Montreal ballroom scene is really young, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So the Montreal ballroom scene started in 2017. With Gerard Ex-Reyes.
I did take a few classes with Gerard. Mm-hmm. So fun, such a good teacher.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Yeah, Gerard was, like, Montreal's mother. And there were, like, a couple of other people. You know, in the beginning, there was Wayne that was also... basically, it's, like, Toronto that helped Montreal create the scene. Because Toronto had been running... I don't know, like, at least 5 years before, yeah.
Hmm. And then from Montreal, you went to Mexico and found the ballroom there? How
yeah.
did that happen?
Yeah, oh, that's a good story. My favorite. So, yeah, I was, you know, the scene was so small and new in Montreal, and, you know, we were just, like, a couple of people figuring it out, and it was so magical to be a part of that. It felt like everything was possible in a way, you know. And for me, it was also like the beginning of my queer transition, like kind of like trying to figure out shit. And then I left Montreal. I knew I didn't want to live in this country, basically, and traveled a bit. And then at one point, I was living in Mexico, not in Mexico City, and I went to Mexico City for actually dance workshops, like unrelated to ballroom. And I went to Vogue class. I had like met people online from the ballroom community in Mexico. And so yeah, I went to Anya's class and she was like, hey, there's a ball on Saturday. There's a kiki ball. So basically like in ballroom, there's the mainstream scene, which is more like, you know, the big houses from like the 60s and like, you know, competition and trophies, you know, it's like the big thing. And the kiki scene is more like for newbies, like to learn and to have fun and just like, kind of like, yeah, I prefer the kiki scene because it's more my vibe, you know, it's just like, we're here to learn and not to like be the best, you know, I don't know. Anyway, so there was a kiki ball and I was like, okay, I'm gonna go. And I knew no one, like not a single soul, because Anya that I had met wasn't available that night. And I had seen that the categories, there was Sex Siren, which I had never walked, and I was interested in trying. So I was like, okay, let's do it. I had trained, like, at my house, you know, a couple of times, and I don't know. And so I get to the ball, I know no one at all, and I walk Sex Siren, and I win. And people were like, who is that, you know? Who is that bald person from Canada, you know? And that was like, yeah, wow, it was like definitely one of the highlights, like probably of my life. It was like such a high feeling.
Oh my God, I can imagine. That's amazing.
Yo, yeah, it was crazy. But mostly I felt, you know, I had been gone from Montreal for like 7 months maybe, and I had spent like 2 months in Jamaica, which was really rough. It was the first time I had to like hide my sexual orientation. Like, I never had to do that, you know? Mm. And I, you know, I was living in a village, so I didn't have a lot of queer community around. I mean, I didn't. And so to be like in that space where like finally I was like, oh my God, people, like gender non-conforming people and drag queens, and like, and I really felt welcome. Like, really, really welcome. And I just had, like, a great night. Because people can also be like, who is that? You know, we don't know her. Yeah, in ballroom, we all use feminine pronouns. It's not, like, a neutral thing. But it wasn't like that for me. Yeah. People were like, wow, who are you? Like,
wow, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
And why Six Siren? What attracted you to it?
You know, like, I don't even know. Like, now that I'm like, wow, like, how did all of this happen? And I often think about that first night. Like, I imagine, like, if I had gotten a chop, which is, like, you don't pass your audition, you know, to compete, maybe I would have been like, ah, okay, I wanted to explore that category, and, like, that's it, you know? Because there's other categories I was curious in exploring, and some that I was like, okay, well, I did that. It was, like, interesting, right? And I wonder, like, if I hadn't had that kind of response from the public and the judges on that night, like, what would have happened with my whole fucking life? I don't know.
Because right now, you're mostly competing in Six Iron.
Yeah,
right?
I am known for Six Iron, yeah. Early in the mornings when I talk about you. Yeah. I hit you like what you say. In the mornings when I want to
What does it mean to you to be a Six Siren ballroom dancer?
Six Siren is a lifestyle, so it is though. What does it mean to... it's a really good question. I think it's really about desiring myself, yeah. So the first, like, tip I had about walking Six Siren was you want to fuck yourself and you want to fuck the judges. But the first tip of you want to fuck yourself, you know? And no one, you can't make anyone desire you. Like, you can't make anyone believe that story if you don't actually desire yourself, you know? And I do, you know? So that's what it's about for me. And it was a lot also in coming to terms with being sexy while being androgynous. And I remember a conversation I had with you in 2017, like, before ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember, we were, like, in a cafe, and I was crying, and I was like, I can't feel sexy while I'm not feminine, and I don't know why, because, like, for me, like, people, there's a lot of people who are gender non-conforming who are, like, very attractive, you know, but I can't feel that for myself. And you were just like, dude, like, I mean, you didn't say that like that, but you were like, you're hot, yeah, you know? Like, you can do it.
But it is like a very hard question. I think there is a lot of gender non-conforming person or queer folks who have felt so much shame because they don't look like or they don't fit in like the norms of society, mm-hmm. and the quest or like the journey toward desiring yourself can be a difficult one or a tumultuous one.
Yeah.
Is it something that you've conscientiously explored after that time during the transition? Because you seem so certain now.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely. I remember actually, so yeah, like that last year I was in Montreal, I was dancing and I was, I explored like many styles and I was dancing whacking. And that's when like I shaved my head for the first time and I was just like really feeling uncomfortable with my femininity, and it's something I didn't allow myself to experience out of dance. So dance was like my only place where I could feel, and also I felt the only way I could be sensual was by being feminine, because that's what I had been my whole life, you know. I was always like, I guess, very flirty at the least. I'm like, I was a hoe, yeah, but I mean it was always really flirty, and so I didn't know how to do that anymore. And then there were pictures, and I was like really feeling weird about it, like kind of disconnected, and now I'm like, okay, it's because like I'm just so sensual, you know, and disconnecting myself from my femininity, where when I didn't know how to be sensual in not a feminine way yet, was just like I felt disconnected with myself, you know, with my core. And so there's pictures of the show where I'm like touching my hair, which is like shaved. And it was a moment where the teacher, and oh, she was so good. Her name is Samantha Montoya. Props to her. She's a good, a really good teacher, whacking in hip-hop here in Montreal. And it was a moment she was like, okay, touch your hair. And in rehearsal, she looked at me and she's like, you know what I mean. Like, your hair is a feeling. It's not just a thing, right? And I was like, yeah, yeah, sure. And then there's this picture and I'm touching my bald head and I'm so hot. And when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, like, this is me, you know, I can do this. And I'm like androgynous and I'm sexy and I'm just really owning it. So that was like a big breakthrough for me. And then to like kind of get to know that, to like kind of figure out like how it can be sexy and androgynous and also like out of the like heterosexual frame, you know? Because even, you know, I've always been bisexual, but, or like pansexual, but I feel even like to women, I guess I was attractive being feminine. I don't know. It was like learning again.
I mean, I totally relate to the story that you're saying because I felt for so long that if you were not feminine, you couldn't be like sensual or sexy either. Mm-hmm. It feels like there's a lack of model, yeah. Right? Like it feels like our generation or the one, anyway, like we're about the same age.
yeah, we're in the same generation.
But it feels like before there was like there's like the femme and you have the bushes. Mm-hmm. So even in the queer community, you can have like your role model of like what it mean, how can you be attractive.
Yeah.
But I felt in my own queer life transition that it was really hard to not really fit in either or of these categories and that you had to fit in somewhere.
Yeah.
But fitting in either one of these categories mean that you had to like take parts of yourself out of the equation and then you're not your full self and then you're not sexy because you're disconnected.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
definitely. It's sad. It's actually a part. It's like grieving parts of yourself. Like, how can you be sensual and butch and androgynous and sexy and feminine all at the same time? Like, cis person can do, right?
Yeah. But then that's... Okay, so finally, I think that's why I feel what I'm doing is important. Because, you know, in Mexico, there was no... Before me, there was no, like, androgynous sex iron, you know? And, like, maybe even now I'm, like, I would have to think about it, like, who else, you know, is doing this with this kind of look, you know? So that was new. And I think that's important to have, representation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, even here in any other scenes, I feel like I've heard that often. Oh, it's
even worse, you know?
Yeah. Having representation is important, and when you don't have it, what are you recreating?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, What is the most surprising part of being a sex iron?
Well, I think maybe for me it's kind of like I'm just living my life, you know? Just living my life, doing my shit, and I kind of forget what it means maybe for other people. And like recently I had some comments, so I do pole dancing now too. And someone I don't know told my friend, anyway, someone like who saw some of my posts on Instagram was like, shit, it's so nice to see someone who's androgynous be sexy because we don't see that. Mm. And also it's really cool to see someone who's not like typically feminine do pole dancing, who has like also, you know, hairy armpits and... and also be so strong.
Oh, you need to be so strong to do that?
Oh, yeah. I'm like, and for me, now I'm like really enjoying that. Really, like, yeah, I feel fucking powerful. But, and it was really good for me to hear that, like, someone felt seen or, like, saw different possibilities for themselves seeing me being me. I was like, shit, like, that's so cool, because I just, like, do my shit, and I live my life, and I don't really think about it twice, you know? And to hear that it has an impact on other people to be like, oh, like, I can be whatever, and if it's not necessarily, like, I can be this kind of sexy, you know? But it's, like, I can be so many kinds of sexy, I can be so many kinds of strong, I can, you know, yeah, just be really fluid, and I think, like, as a whole, that's what's really strong about sex iron. I think it's a very vulnerable category to walk. And people who see us get inspired because they're like, okay, I can do that too, you know? Even if it's not like in that way, you know, but that's what, and it's a thing like that I've shared with fellow sex sirens, where, yeah, people come to see us and they're like, I see you and I want to do that because you look so empowered, or like, yeah, you're just living your best life, you know?
It's interesting how sometimes just living your best life is actually something that is very powerful, but also collectively very powerful.
Yeah.
Because you allow new roads to be open for other people. Like, it makes me think of someone that came to me last year. You know, you're just living your best life as, like, mm-hmm. a trans creature, and this person comes and it's just in awe.
Yeah.
It's like, I am like you, but I didn't felt like it was okay.
Yeah.
And there's something, I think personally there's something sad also mm-hmm. in this, and having to live your life and having so much impact because what yeah. you're doing is so unique, but at the same yeah. time it's really beautiful, empowering, and inspiring for other people.
It's a responsibility, mm. yeah, also. It becomes kind of, yeah, it kind of feels like that in a way, but...
Do you feel like this responsibility is as some kind of weight sometimes?
Yeah, I guess. Because, yeah, people become... And then this is a really weird thing, okay? Because social media is fucked up. mm-hmm. So also, like, people will think they know you or they see you perform and they imagine you're, like, this amazing burbiculo, like, 24/7, you know? When it's like, I mean, it's not that I'm not, I'm always burbi, but I have many, like, aspects to myself and to my life, so it's a weird thing when people perceive you in a certain way, and, you know, you become, like, micro-famous to, like, specific scenes, and people don't see you as a person anymore. That's weird. Yeah.
Hmm. And what would you say that being a sex siren, a micro-famous ballroom performer in Mexico, what is your biggest challenge in that context?
Like, in what way?
I'm just wondering, was there any challenges in your career as a sex siren or in embodying this?
Oh, you know what is a fucking challenge? Dating!
Wow, tell me more about it. What do you mean? you would think it would be the reverse, right?
I don't know. It's kind of like you're not accessible. Hmm. Yeah. So people see you in this way and they're like, oh my God, you know. And it's weird, especially with me, like, I don't know, I like just... I'm like, do I want to talk about this? people, like, it just happens a lot that people question their sexual orientation meeting me, you know? And it's really uncomfortable because they're like, shit, I was never attracted to, like, a non-binary person before, you know? Someone who's so femme, who's so mask at the same time, or, like... And that can be really confusing. That can be, like, so hard because... suddenly it's like they don't know who they are anymore. And then that's hard for me too because, you know, it's happened a couple of times with gay men. With also, like, women, but gay men for sure a lot. Where there's this thing where it's like, okay, there's, like, mutual attraction. And then at one point they're like, I can't do this, you know? So for me it's like, shit, like, I know... It's weird, this weird tension where I'm like, okay, I can be desired, but I can't be loved. Or I can be loved, but, like, definitely not desired because, like, this is too weird, you know, I can't go there. And then, yeah, when, like, you're kind of, like, known in a way and, like, people, yeah, definitely, like, kind of, like, idolize you. You definitely don't want to, you know, date those people. mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it is a story that I know even here in Montreal. Not that it happens to me, it doesn't happen to me, but there are these figures, right, in queer cultures where you have idols, kind of, and people that these people that like everybody is attracted to, but no one really knows, or what are they attracted to? Even is it the person, or is it the idea of the person, and what in this idea is attractive to them? Mm-hmm. What does it nourish in their dreams and fantasy?
Yeah. Yeah, and then sometimes it's like definitely it's like fetishizing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's definitely interesting. But you're doing also different performances in 6RN. Do you want to talk more about like what are the projects that interest you the most right now? Or
yeah, so basically like I'm a 6RN like within ballroom, and then out of ballroom I'm just like a performer that uses sex and sensuality. So what I just told you about, you know, it was kind of a big deal, you know, for a while. And then at one point, so that was my last performance, like just before COVID. So in like February 2020, in a festival, I did this like installation and performance where a lot of things were going on. It was actually kind of crazy, and I want to do it again. Yeah, I sent a proposal here, so we'll see.
Good luck with that.
Thank you. But, I kind of explore the fact where how I have felt being non-binary, like not desirable or desirable, but not in the right way. And just kind of like fucking up with people's desire, you know? And that was hard. That was hard. But basically, I took it and transformed it into like this performance and installation, and then I also realized how many contradictions I had about it, you know.
Yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, because I was like, no one wants me, and then I'm like, wait, that's not true. Like, it's just that I focus on the people that do that, and not on the people who would actually date me, you know, and that I don't want to date. You know, let's face the truth. Mm-hmm. It's not that. Yeah, so I was like, and then I played with that and with, it would be kind of long to explain the whole thing, but I really was able to use that kind of painful stuff to create and to like have a catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about it. I also did like performances about like sexual violences. And really, really intense stuff. And sometimes I'm like, what the fuck do I do, like, to myself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
To my body, to my limits. And at the end of the day, I'm like, it's so worth it. It's so, so, so worth it, you know?
And what is your artistic message? Like, what do you carry with you when you don't do those performances? What matters to you?
It's a funny thing, because it's always very, like, personal and intimate, and comes from, like, and it's very, like, instinctive also. It's, like, it's very intuitive. And very often I understand what I did, like, a long time afterwards. Like, months later. But also, I feel that I really work with vulnerability, and that makes people connect with what I do, basically. Because I'm also very interested of, like, you know, I personally have this opinion that, you know, we can all do art, but it doesn't have to be shared. You know, if you want to share art, you have to think about your public. In that way, I'm like, I don't necessarily think like about the public, but I think I want the public to be in the learning zone, kind of thing. I want them to be uncomfortable, but not provoked. I want them to be curious. I want them to be vulnerable with me, basically. And it seems to work. Yeah.
It makes me think of a concept in somatics, actually.
Yeah.
Is it something that you had in mind when you were doing this? Like this idea that you don't want to push your boundaries when you are trying to heal any kind of trauma, that you actually want to sit in the discomfort, but be in your central in your vagal system.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I didn't know about it at the time.
Hmm.
So it's also like, yeah, I guess we're going to talk about somatic sex education, right?
Yeah.
So I now realize I was doing so many things that were linked that I kind of like, I guess, intuitively knew or felt, because now I'm like, oh, that's what it was. You know, it makes sense, but I didn't know at the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what made the, how did you discover somatic sex education
training? I Googled it. It was really funny because, yeah, so then it was like the pandemic started. I lost all my contracts and my income. And so at one point, and I got really depressed also. So I came back to Montreal. I went to stay with my parents, thing that I had not ever done, like ever since I moved out when I was 17. So it was like a big deal. And yeah, then it was kind of like the talk about when is nightlife going to start again? You know, when is dancers going to work again? And that was like a big, we don't know. And I know a lot of dancers, you know, change careers. And for me, it was like never as clear that dancing is my motor, you know? It's like my reason to live. So I was like, okay, I'm not done with this, but also, do I have a plan B, or how can I help my plan A? Because also at that point, you know, I've been giving sex ed classes for, I don't know, a while, like two and a half years maybe. And first it was kind of, yeah, about ballroom and the competition. And then at one point it just became, I don't know, I was just like seeing my students have this, the like healing in so many aspects of their lives. And it was so unexpected. And I was like, shit, what we're doing is so much bigger than we thought. And during the pandemic, I also gave workshops online where one of them was called Sensualidad, Alquimia y Sanación. So that's sensuality, alchemy, and healing, where basically I shared my creative process, and like it ended with the creation of like the students, and it was so fucking powerful. And I was like, okay, this is great, but also I would be kind of scared for it to get out of hands, because like we're dealing with trauma here, and you know, I can hold space for that, but I'm not a professional. So I was like, okay, how can my plan B become my plan A? So I Googled somatic sexology. So because I was like, okay, sexology is interesting, but it's really boring to me. Like, talk therapy is like, I do it also, and I, like, yeah, it saved my life also, so, like, but more for, like, I need the body to be engaged. So, yeah, and then I discovered that somatic sex education actually existed. You know, it was a field. I thought, I didn't know. I was like, oh, you know, who is doing this kind of weird thing? And there's people, and so I found the institute in Canada, in Victoria. It's called the Institute for the Study of Somatic Sex Education. It's somaticsexeducator.com, if you want to check the program. And I cried. Like, when I found that, I cried because I was like, this exists. Like, there's a space for me. There's, like, a community of people who are doing weird work like I am, and you know, we always talk about sex work because, you know, somatic sex education is in the lineage of sex work. So it's kind of like it's a scary place for society, you know. And to be like, shit, but I'm not alone in this, it was so exciting. So I got into the program, and now I'm in course 3 already.
Wow, that's amazing. Congrats on this discovery.
Thank you.
I mean, all these programs that are holistic alternative trainings, you really need to dig up a little bit to find them, but I'm very glad that you found them.
Yeah, and it's like a beautiful community.
And how would you explain this to someone who've never heard of somatics? And if you know, no pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. Explain what somatic is. Well, I like to explain like the soma, somatic, as the body as it is seen from within, or like as it is perceived, as it's felt, you know, because you have like the physical body, which is more like how you move and, you know, And then the somatic body is more, how do you feel, you know, and how emotions express in your body. And, you know, somatic sex education then can also take, like, so many forms, which is also super exciting. But it's also about, you know, we need our bodies to learn, especially when we talk about sex, like, what the fuck, you know, we're, like, in school then, and, like, I don't know, they're like, ooh, I don't know, STIs, or, like, pregnancy, like, scary, scary sex, or even if we talk about consent, and it's just like, okay, this is consent, like, so simple, right? But if it doesn't relate to the body, I think, like, that's why sex education is, like, so terrible right now, because we never talk about the body, and sex is about the body.
About the body and the different bodies,
yeah,
being in relationship together.
Yeah.
I feel like we all, there is a lack in this domain where we don't necessarily talk about the relationship or the intimacies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if sex is that one thing that we don't want to look too close at, so those,
yeah,
are like the biological thing that are like clear and,
mm-hmm,
cut, and you don't go into the politics of it. Or
yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, a simple yet profound game that it's called the 3-minute game. It was developed by Dr. Betty Martin. You can look her website up. She has, like, a ton of free resources, and I love her videos. She's, like, so, like, grounded. And it's basically, let's say I would say, like, okay, Minuit, how would you like me to touch you for the next 3 minutes? And then it doesn't have to be a sexy game, like, at all, you know? You could be like, oh, can you, like, rub my hands in yours? And I could be like, yeah. Or I could be like, you know what? Would you be comfortable if it was actually your arms, you know? And then we can negotiate too. And then, like, okay, we do that for 3 minutes. And then it's very clear that I am giving you a gift and you're receiving it. And for me, when I played that game with my best friend, she helped me with my homework. Basically, that was, like, my homework for the program. And we were both, like, stunned at how that was the most useful thing we had ever done about consent in our whole lives. And it's so simple. Like, we can do that with kids, you know?
I totally agree with you. I tried this game, I think, last year for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it really changed the way I saw consent,
yeah,
actually, because I didn't saw it as something that you're doing something to not break a line, but it,
mm-hmm,
was actually creating a space in which you're creating consent together.
Yeah.
In which it's enjoyable.
Yes. Because consent is taught so much, you know, when we talk about it, which is already great, but it's very much about, like, giving permission, you know, asking for permission to touch someone else's body. It's
like
can
it's
I?
Wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can I do this? And it's not about, like, what do you want and what do I want and what I'm willing to do for you, you know, and that difference between wanting and willing to do.
Got me looking so crazy, my baby, I'm not myself lately, I'm foolish, I don't do this, I've been playing myself. Try to explain how I'm feeling, and my pride is the one to blame.
tuning in to the radio. You're listening to Audio Smut on CKUT. I'm Minui, and we're having a special guest tonight, Burubikulo, who's talking about the Six Siren dance career, definitely, and the education and the sex somatic training in BC. And I'm wondering, what is the, because you're talking about all these beautiful things that you've learned there, or things that you knew before but didn't necessarily knew how to articulate together, and what so far is one of the biggest learning that you've done that you would like to share with as many people as you could?
In somatic sex education?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, basically it goes pretty much around, like, that, like, the wheel of consent and communicating. I feel like we, so I did, like, my first intensive. There's two intensives for the program. Usually it's in person, but, you know, COVID. I'm going to wait for the second one to be in person, though. Because we have to learn to touch people also, you know, like, in real life, not just... but it was... I feel we learn communication skills, which are, you know, for sure essential to sex education and to sexuality, you know, but it also just for life. and it's kind of, yeah, realizing that we really don't learn how to communicate. And for sure sexuality is going to go wrong, like, all the time if we don't know how to communicate. So I think that's a really big piece for me. And learning about our nervous systems, you know, and how to really be present within ourselves and then with someone else, and then how does that influence the way we learn, the way we engage together, the way we can be sexual and intimate, you know. It's, like, huge, but it's kind of far and away from sexuality as we perceive it, you know. For me, like, the biggest chunk has been... about, and then it's like about communication, and then it's like so precious to have a community of people where I feel we're actually on board together. I have never felt like that with any community, because we're always like activated, you know.
You mean about the school?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess, like, for sure I would have the feeling like somatic sex educators may be kind of like a wide range thing, but for sure, like, for me it would be like the people I was with in my intensive, for sure, you know. But I know it's broader than that, because we learn, you know, the same things where we're actually present together, and we're in a place where we're not reactive, you know, we're not defensive, we're like really there. And to feel like with people where people can be like, hey, like, you know, what you just said for me, that was ouch, you know? And to be like, thank you, but, like, truthfully. And not being like, oh, shit, I'm sorry, and, or like, what? Why? And just be in that place of, like, yo, thank you.
It needs a lot of courage to be able to stand up in the face of sometimes failures or just accidents, you know, not being perfect. And you definitely need a lot of self-esteem, but also to be able to regulate your own nervous system.
Yeah.
And I think that you're right that most people in any kind of communities may have difficulty to be fully present or are actually activated so much in their lives.
Yeah.
But I'm also thinking about LGBTQ communities and marginalized folks that had different kind of life than, I don't know, like cis heteronormative people, racialized folks, in which being activated becomes the norm.
Yep.
And becomes very difficult to be in a relationship or to engage with their sensuality or their sexualities.
For sure. I just want to note, though, like, that the program is, like, not cis and straight at all, you know. The three directors are queer. Two of them are trans, and so, like, and it's really not focused. There is a lack of racialized folks within the community of somatic sex education, but also, like, for example, the Institute has a BIPOC scholarship for that reason, and they also have a BIPOC liaison faculty member who is actually Kai Cheng Tham, who is, like, an author that I really love, because I think what she, Yeah, it's like all get mixed together. I think it's like crazy how the world works. But basically, you know, for me, you know, I belong to Mexican ballroom community, and it's a complicated community, you know. It's the only community that I'm like willingly part of, and will now somatic sex educators, because and it's so complicated, and it's like so full of hurt and trauma, and I'm still there, you know, because I want to be there, and but I think about it so much, and I really wonder if like other people, I know some are also thinking about it, but and like Kai Cheng's book, I Hope we choose Love, was like, shit, you know, about queer communities and how we like traumatize each other and we re-traumatize each other, and how hard it is to be like so imperfect, but still like we still need each other, and how can we actually be there? And I feel that it's really interesting that Kai Cheng is, you know, studying also to become a somatic sex educator, because it makes so much sense. I think, like, I kind of believe that the only, maybe this is, like, too radical, you know, like, black and white thinking, but, like, kind of, like, the only solution that I see right now is really to get into that kind of somatic healing before we can really come together and go forward as communities.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you. And it's interesting, it makes me think of the work of Resma Menakem.
Yeah.
Yeah, of thinking about discrimination, racism, about all the trauma that we push against each other collectively, mm-hmm. and through generation, and yeah. that if you don't heal these in the body by being able to calm your nervous system, but also go in those places of trauma and discomfort, yeah. that it's going to stay ideologies and ideas of, mm-hmm. like, what you think about things, but yeah. your action might not change. The way you exactly. create relationship might not change, because it's still rooted in the body.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm reading My Grandmother's Hands right now,
Me
and
too.
it's actually mandatory for a program.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. It's Captain Snowden, right?
Who's yeah.
directing?
Yeah, Captain, yeah, is one of the direction faculty. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a piece of interview with them for the show.
Oh!
That my friend Coral
that's so
interviewed
cool.
for me.
Nice.
A few months back.
Yeah.
So to end the show, people who just come in now, you're listening to Audio Smut. It's Minui, and we're having a very special guest, Pur Piccolo, who's a sex RN dancer, performer, teacher, and a somatic sex educator.
Not yet.
Training.
Information.
I'm wondering what kind of tips you would want to share to people who are curious about sex RN, or would like to, I don't know, practice at home,
mm-hmm.
or would like to embody some of these radical ideas in their lives.
Like taking a space, like time and space container, you know? You're like, okay, I am going to have, I don't know, like, whatever, if it's like kind of scary, maybe like just 10 minutes, you know? And be like, okay. And I would recommend more, you know, for it to, like, actually get into it, because it can take a while. But, like, you know, for me too, to get in that zone. And to just really try to connect with the body. I guess a huge part of, like, the pandemic too is learning to, like, you know, self-touch, and not necessarily masturbation, even though, like, that's great, but also just, like, being able to soothe yourself. And to discover the pleasures of your body, and for me, that, you know, pleasure, desire, and sensuality are, like, so linked. And so there's also one that I think is pretty powerful and kind of scary also, but to try to seduce yourself in the mirror.
Wow.
Yeah. it's a good one. And to just really, like, take time for that. And a lot of people, you know, I make, in some workshops I lead, that's, like, one of the exercises. And people sometimes can, like, be giggly for a really long time, or, like, have a really hard time looking to, you know, theirself in the mirror. But it's worth it, I would say.
Dang, I know what I'm doing tonight.
Yes!
So what's coming up for you in the near future?
Exciting projects. So I'm continuing my program to study somatic sex education, which is pretty cool, because it's you kind of do it within your own rhythm, so that's great. And I'm still in that for like 2 years at least, I would say. But also, so my friend, but also and mentor and an artist and choreographer I just like respect and admire their work so much, Gérard X Reyes, invited me to be part of their next creation. So Gérard is a sexological body worker and a dancer and a choreographer, and their next piece is called Public Private Parts, and it's about sexuality. And it kind of like links all of my interests, so it's really exciting. And so we're going to be in creation artistic residencies in the next months, and hopefully we can premiere at the like in the summer, which is the plan, but you know, COVID. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, Burbikulo, thank you so much for your time and for coming here talking about all your art and life career.
Thank you. It was amazing. Thank you for having me.
On the show this week, you listened to Jeremy All the Time featuring Lil Wayne and Natasha Mosley, Crazy in Love, the remix by Beyoncé. And the last song that you're going to hear just now is Yeah, I Said It by Rihanna. And if you can, listen to my friend Diego DJing on stationstation.fr every day from 4 to 6 this week.
And see you next time. We're going to have a small break in January. We're going to have a archive show coming back for the January show, but we'll be back at Audio Smut in February. Have a happy Holy Gays, everybody. Bye-bye.
Yeah, yeah. I ain't tryna think about it, no. Yeah, I said it, boy, get up beside it. I want you to homicide it. Going so wet, I want you to pack it. And I think I kinda like you. Up against the wall, we don't need a title. Yeah, I said it. Like the show, get a little bit, come a little close now. Take it home on your camera phone. Get a little bad, nigga, watch me blow it down. Yeah, I said it. Yeah, I said it, babe. Yeah, I said it. Yeah, I said it.
COVID-19 pandemic in Canada is serious. We must continue to practice all public health measures. Follow local guidelines for gatherings, maintain physical distancing, wash your hands, wear a mask, and download the COVID Alert app. If you have symptoms, even mild ones, stay home. Protect yourself and others. Learn more at canada.ca/coronavirus or 1-833-784-4397. A message from the Government of Canada.
As we continue to fight the spread of COVID-19, there are new support programs in place for those who need them, including a stronger, more accessible EI and 3 new recovery benefits. Continuing to support Canadians now will help keep us safe and make Canada more resilient. Visit canada.ca/coronavirus to learn about the new income support programs. A message from the Government of Canada.
good evening, and welcome to Amandla, 1 hour of African current affairs brought to you here on CQT 90.3 FM in Montreal. And tonight we are shifting our focus exclusively to Ethiopia. Obviously, we here at Amandla and people around the world are extremely concerned about what's going on in Ethiopia and, you know, ultimately by extension, the Horn of Africa. It's complex. A lot of us really do not know much beyond some of the very, very basic outline of the conflict. And so we really thought that we wanted to delve in deep and try to get a historical and contextual understanding to what is going on. So we have turned to a long-standing contributor to Amandla, Farid Omar, who has been our go-to for years when it comes to talking about the Horn of Africa. And he very kindly made himself available for the entire hour to explore this. And Doug, you were the one who conducted the interviews. Thank you so much for that.
Well, it was a pleasure and a great pleasure to renew my acquaintance with Farid. I just have to tell the audience that there were a couple of technical difficulties in